For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
So, good evening, everyone. I'm very happy to have this evening giving a talk. Ben Henglaes, who's an anthropology professor at Loyola, amongst other things, and also is a member of the board at Ancient Dragon Zengate. And thank you, Ben, for agreeing to give the talk tonight.
Sure.
So, take it away.
Well, good evening, everybody. I have to admit, I'm a professor of anthropology. I give talks all the time. And giving a talk here was really intimidating. I've been having these crazy, weird dreams. You know, all the classic, like, I realize I'm not wearing pants dreams. I've been trying to think about why. And I gotta say, I'm always in awe every Monday night when I hear someone give a Dharma talk. I often find myself for days afterwards sort of thinking about what they said. I'm in awe of people's eloquence. And I'm particularly in awe because this is the kind of situation where opening your mouth and saying anything is almost wrong. I should, you know, jump up and punch somebody in the nose or make some kind of loud noise and run out or something. Way more appropriate than trying to speak about this. But I'm going to plow ahead anyway. I gave my talk a kind of crazy title, Delusion and Commodity Fetishism, Zazen as Revolutionary Practice. Which sounds like some crazy surrealist Buddhist Maoist sect. But anyway,
what's the title again?
Delusion and Commodity Fetishism, Zazen as Revolutionary Practice. And it's a little over the top, as my talk is probably a little over the top. So I want to connect a couple of things, as the title says. I want to connect some classic ideas about the sources of suffering, especially delusion, to equally classic critical social theory about how we perceive commodities, the things that we buy and sell. And I want to argue that Zazen provides us with a particular location or space or practice from which we can challenge how we typically see the things that we buy and sell. I should note from the start the sort of temptation and danger of reading Buddhism in terms of something else. I think this is a really common practice for a lot of us who are trying to figure out how we can take on board this spiritual practice that has some very different cultural roots. You know, there's Buddhism in ecology, Buddhism in neuroscience, Buddhism and motorcycle maintenance, Buddhism and critical social theory. It's interesting how Buddhism resonates with all these contemporary Western ways of thinking about the world. At the same time, as an anthropologist, I have to think about this with a little bit of caution. I think Western rationality, Western ways of understanding the world are really good at sort of infiltrating and colonizing and taking over other practices. So I'm going to do it anyway. So don't pay any attention to anything I'm going to say. No. All right. A little bit of background and then I'm going to jump right in. So a little Buddhism 101, most of you. This is probably nothing you haven't heard before. I want to talk about delusion in connection, of course, with the Four Noble Truths, which are that the world is characterized by dukkha, or suffering, that there's an origin to dukkha, or suffering, that suffering can cease, and that there's a path to cessation. Traditionally, the causes of dukkha are interpreted as having to do with how we misperceive the world. And this misperception, in turn, is reinforced by, in what Buddhism is called, the three poisons, right? Greed, hatred, and delusion. They get defined a bunch of different ways. So today I want to talk about delusion. In particular, how our society encourages us to perceive commodities. And I want to draw upon a classic theory of commodity fetishism that comes, of course, from Marx and has gotten taken up and reworked and used. It's sort of a koan that critical theorists have been playing with for a long time. The basic idea, to cut to the punchline, to give you the punchline before I've told you the joke, is that we come to see commodities as alive. We come to see the things that we buy and sell. We impute agency to them. We think of them as if they were objects that have a life force. And in particular, we come to think of them as controlling us, seeing them as things that control us, that produce us, rather than seeing us as creating the things that we buy and sell. Now, my particular inspiration for today is a classic essay by Gary Snyder called Buddhist Anarchism. And Gary Snyder argued that greed, hatred, and delusion are institutional features built into contemporary society. And that one of the things that Buddhists and Buddhism needs to do is to develop a theory of institutional forms of delusion and aversion. So in his essay, you can find online a bunch of different places. Gary Snyder, the famous poet, Buddhist teacher, writes, "No one today can afford to be innocent or indulge himself in ignorance of the nature of contemporary governments, politics, and social orders. The national polities of the modern world maintain their existence by deliberately fostering craving and fear. The quote-unquote free world has become economically dependent on a fantastic system of stimulation of greed, which cannot be fulfilled, sexual desire, which cannot be satiated, and hatred, which has no outlet except against oneself, the persons one is supposed to love, or the revolutionary aspirations of the pitiful, poverty-stricken, marginal societies like Cuba or Vietnam. The conditions of the Cold War and the continuing wars have turned all modern societies, communist included, into vicious distorters of man's true potential. They create populations of hungry ghosts with giant appetites and throats no bigger than needles. The soil, the forest, and all animal life are being consumed by these cancerous collectivities. The air and water of the planet is being fouled by them. There's nothing in human nature or the requirements of human social organization which intrinsically requires that a culture be contradictory, repressive, and productive of violent and frustrated personalities. Recent findings in anthropology, yay, and psychology make this more and more evident. One can prove it for himself by taking a good look at his own nature through meditation. Once a person has this much faith and insight, he must be led to a deep concern with the need for radical social change through a variety of hopefully nonviolent means." So I read, a bunch of other essays by Gary Snyder right when I was sort of first learning about Buddhism, and then read this essay and have really been struck by this connection that Snyder is pointing to thinking about how our society collectively, institutionally produces forms of delusion, and to think in particular about how this connects with Zazen. So my other inspiration today is going to be loosely a bunch of essays in The Art of Just Sitting, including, of course, Dogen's famous essays on Zazen, and some essays by Suzuki Roshi as well. So I'll refer to that a little bit. It's a fantastic book if you haven't read it. A nice little collection of different essays about Zazen. So the four themes that I want to touch on. Although we're told all the time that you're only supposed to do three, that people can only keep three in their heads. I'm going to shoot for four. We'll see if we get there. The first theme, the separation of the doer from the done. Second theme, the perception of the world in terms of identities and dualisms. The third theme, notions of exchange and value. And the fourth theme, the misperception of the world. In particular, seeing things as external to and controlling us. So the first thing. In a fantastic book, sort of rethinking some classic Marxist theory, John Holloway argues that at the beginning of the way in which we think about commodities is the separation of the doer from the done. That the person who creates something then has that something that he or she has created taken away. Now, the way that this happens in our society, right, the producer is separated from the things she produces. Those things are then exchanged for money, right? So the productive activity of the doer is no longer a done that she controls. Rather, she gives that to someone else who gives her money in exchange. This has a whole series of effects on social relations. People become alienated from what they make, as it's no longer something that they control. People become alienated from themselves and their own labor as they come to think of it, not in terms of the creative, productive labor that they engage in, but they come to think of it in terms of how they will be remunerated for it, how they will be paid for it. And I'll talk a little bit about how this also establishes a way in which we perceive objects as well. Now, thinking this in contrast to Zazen is really interesting. And I was kind of trying to kick around various ways of thinking about Zazen. Is Zazen pure doing? Is Zazen a doing without a doer? It often feels to me that I'm doing Zazen without me really being there, or me being there at times or not being there at other times. And I think that this is part of why in Zazen we're continuously reminded to come back to our body. Dogen in Fuken Zazengi has a long passage where he talks about the body, about returning to ourselves, returning to the connection between the doer, our bodily doing, and the process of Zazen as well. Yet, of course, in the way in which we think about Zazen, the separation of doer from done is really challenged, right? And Dogen repeats this many different places where he talks about what's important is simply devotion to sitting, total engagement in immobile sitting, right? This total commitment to not doing. So I think this allows us to perceive this fundamental separation in a different way. The second theme is the creation of identity and of dualisms and separation. So in the theory of thinking about commodities, this process of separating the producer from the product, the doer from the done, creates a whole other system of dualisms which come to structure how we think about our world. Right? The separation of us versus them, the separation of the subject versus the objects that she produces. It establishes a whole series of other fissures, other splits in our world. Now, Zazen, I think, really helps us understand and perceive these dualisms. We, of course, have this perception into the fleeting nature of me, of the porous boundaries between me and them, of subjects and objects. And I think it's particularly important that in Zazen, this perception of the limited nature of these dualities is not so much intellectualized as it is felt or intuited or experienced. I think also, unlike a lot of modern critical post-structuralist thought, in Zazen we experience the fissures of this dualism in a positive way. We see the interconnections rather than the gaps. I think this is, of course, why Dogen insists on the connection between practice and enlightenment, seeing practice as enlightenment, seeing them as not separate things. So, for instance, in The Wholehearted Way, Dogen says, "The realm of self-awakening and awakening of others is fundamentally endowed with the quality of enlightenment, with nothing lacking, and allows the standard of enlightenment to be actualized continuously." Right? So he's pointing to how Zazen can give us a perception that these dualisms are fundamentally only one way of perceiving the world. So the third theme in the classic analysis of commodities is the theme of value. The argument here is that when things are produced not just to be used, but when things are produced to be exchanged, they come to have a new type of value. Right? Value comes to be thought about in a new way. So, for instance, if you were to make a broom, right? You would think of that broom, its value would be what you do with that broom, how you use it to clean a room, to clean a space. You would think of it in terms of the bodily activity involved in using that broom, what it feels like in your hands. Now, when that broom then becomes an object that can be exchanged for something else, right, then that broom gets thought of as a fraction of something else, a ratio of something else. So you can exchange a broom for 10 pens. Then the broom is 10 pens. The pen is 1/10 of a broom. When you then can do this through money, then the broom becomes thought of not just in terms of its use value, what you can use it for, but in terms of its exchange value, the money that you can exchange it for. In the process of doing this, objects go from being incommensurable. Objects all have their particular uses, and those uses can't be compared to other uses, to being comparable. They can all be compared based on the amount of money that they can be exchanged for. They also go from being connected to specific bodily practices and experiences. The way you use a broom is not the way you use a pen or the way you use a guitar, to all being abstract. That use is a value, is an abstraction. It's not connected to bodily practices. Now, I've had a whole lot of fun thinking about the value of Zazen. What is Zazen good for? And we're reminded again and again in our practice that Zazen is good for nothing. And I think that this is insisted upon again and again to break us out of this way of thinking about the practices that we engage in, the things that we do, in terms of what we're going to get for them. So Suzuki Roshi began a passage writing about Zazen, saying, "We say that our practice should be without gaining ideas, without any expectations, even of enlightenment." I find this for myself really challenging. I often feel like I should get something for my Zazen. My Zazen is buying me something. As if the world were some giant cash register and I've put money in and I should get something out of it. I think one way to think about this is that when we're doing Zazen, we're momentarily stepping out of either way of thinking about value. I mean, Zazen clearly not something that we can exchange for something else. And yet Zazen also has no use in particular. Right? What it's good for is not as immediately perceptible. Not to say that Zazen doesn't have effects and doesn't have uses, right? The final theme that maybe will wrap it up a little bit. The analysis of commodity fetishism argues that we come to think of commodities as alive, as controlling us, that we fundamentally misperceive them as the products of human labor. The epitome of this, of course, God, I feel sacrilegious doing this. Right? Is this. Right? The sort of the commodity that has no use value, right? I mean, this is a
holding up
piece
a dollar
of
bill.
Paper. Right? This is I guess you could use it to, I don't know, wipe your nose or clean something up, right? But this is almost pure exchange value, right? It's almost completely abstract value, completely unreal value, right? And of course, the way that we talk about commodities, but especially the way that we talk about money, is we talk about it as if it were alive, right? The dollar is strong against the pound. The dollar is weak. The dollar grows, right? My money is increasing, right? And we come to think of it, of course, also as controlling us, right? We do things because of money. We carry out forms of labor because of money, etc., right? And in thinking about commodities, the argument is that this is fundamentally a misperception, right? That this object only has value because of a social agreement. We've decided that this has value, and a whole set of institutions, etc., that bolster the value of this, right? But there's a social agreement that we have determined that this has some sort of value. I think likewise in Zazen, we come to see how our patterns of reacting to things, thinking about things, shape our perceptions of the world, and often how these are misperceptions. I'm struck in thinking about how we think about, you know, the dollar as alive, right? And how Dogen continuously sort of plays with, flips on their head assumptions of things as animate and inanimate. So in The Wholehearted Way, there's a passage in The Wholehearted Way where he talks about when people are practicing Zazen, how all these objects that we think of as inanimate help with Zazen, how walls and stones help with Zazen. Likewise, of course, in the Mountains and Rivers Sutra, Dogen plays with this idea of mountains as walking, mountains as alive. And I think what Dogen is insisting upon is to reverse our usual assumptions that nature is somehow an object that's separate from us. And he's insisting instead that they're connected to us and, in fact, that they have things to teach us. Now, the theory of commodity fetishism argues that even though we can come to think about, understand that the way in which we speak about commodities is fundamentally a misperception, we can't just step out of the world that we live in, where we buy and exchange objects, without some really fundamental changes to our system. But our perception of that system leads to that system having certain sorts of effects. I think likewise, in Zazen and in Buddhism, we come to understand that we can't magically erase our karma. We have these perceptions of the world that shape how we react and respond. We can come to understand those reactions and responses in a better way, but we can't magically go them away or get rid of them. I was really struck in the precept ceremony that one of the practices is our avowal of our ancient twisted karma, right? This isn't the idea that somehow we're reborn and our prior patterns go away, that we can confess our actions to someone and have those actions go away. Instead, the idea is to avow our karma, to be aware of, to think about, to take ownership over how we perceive the world. With the idea that understanding that can also lead us to perceive and act in the world in a slightly different way. So I think I will leave it there and see if you have comments, questions.